Good morning. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Unpacking the Day with me, Devin Shombe. It's that time of the early morning that we look at the face of business. Let us thank Mbalanganja, that is Mr. Francis Nengera, especially from the line of Kuthamosha. And with me, Devin Shombe, we are going until the hour of 11. We'll look at what is happening in the continent of Africa, what is happening in Namibia, and we also look at the Villager newspaper for today. What do we have for you in the Villager newspaper? What are some of the development when it comes to economic conversation? And from the hour of 8:30 there, we'll be joined by an economic researcher and a senior analyst from Monasa, that is Theo Erastus Nakasole. Especially to look at critical matters of importance, matters of economic affairs, and at that conversation, we are going to look at human upliftment. We'll look at the relationship between compliance with international standard and also human upliftment. To say, Namibia has been doing very well in terms of doing what the world expects. But is a country doing well for its own people? We look at recent compliance with Financial Action Task Force. We also look at the aspect of financial inclusion. You look at gender equality. You can also speak about peace and stability. Then the question is that why the world is praising us? Are our own people praising us too? But those are some of the discussion that we'll be able to get into, especially from 8:30 moving forward. Looking at what is happening, also between the hour of 8 and 11, understand that the fate of the president of our neighboring country will be determined at 10 o'clock, especially regarding the ongoing case of Palapala, to say what is the Western Cape High Court going to decide today? Are they going to decide in favor of the president to stop the continuation of impeachment process, or they are going to let him roll and also face parliamentary accountability? We are at a very interesting time in history of the continent of Africa, especially when it comes to the check and balance, and also when it comes to who has power, and also those who are charged with the responsibility of having political power. Are they using the power correctly? Those are some of the things that we'll be able to look at, especially between the hour of 8 and 11. Starting with what we have today, before we look at our guest. There's a statement from the African Union that is condemning the works of the Houthis, especially when it comes to attacking the ships in the Red Sea. One thing that you need to know is that the war between Iran and USA is intensifying, and most of the casualties, especially looking at the United States side, these are the casualties which are young people, young people between the age of 18 and also 30. And it's also very interesting to see that the current war is not a war which is being fought by AK-47, it's a war which is fought by drones. And most of the casualties are those who are advanced in technology. And to look into that, understand that one of the allies of Iran, that is the Houthis in Yemen, they are targeting the corridors, especially transportation route, and one of that is the Red Sea, where you'll be able to see that there's another blockage targeting the kingdom of Saudi Arabia. So the African Union is condemning what is happening, And it's indeed gave that statement looking into the peace and stability. And the question is that when the Houthis in Yemen continue with what is happening now, for how long is it going to be, and to what extent is it going to impact the trade with Africa and also Namibia too, to say, do we have other products that are using the trade route of the Red Sea, or for now we are still safe? And that is also something that need interrogation, to say to what extent is global conflict will continue impacting the economy of sub-Saharan Africa, and also to look at ourselves to say to what extent it is going to impact the economy of Namibia, especially when you look at that context. Before we roll on, let's look at our short commercial break. Then we continue with our conversation and understand that we'll be in contact with Theo Erastus just in 15 minutes, and stay attuned.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the R.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tele ulikoni maondo teto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune uteo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamoiri nawa. Ninge fata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa nora itatu natu bali o itatu watatu omafilane Eagle FM. The eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo teto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune uteo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe pa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamoiri nawa. Ninge fata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa nora itatu natu bali o itatu watatu omafilane Eagle FM. The eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% important is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
We are moving forward with unpacking the day. Before we look at our guest, especially from the hour of 8:30 there, to look at what is really taking us long to get where we want to get, what is really taking us long to uplift human development, because until today, even though we have been speaking, even though policy analysts spoke, politicians spoke, at some point they even proven to say they are the one who can do better than others. Time has passed on, but the aspect of human development in Namibia is still debatable. There is still less growth. The country is still among the highest unequal country in the world. And the question that we are going to ask today, these are the questions which include, why at the best moment in Africa, Namibia still continue to grow very slowly? Why at the best moment in Africa, where millions of people are taken out of poverty, but Namibia with a population of less than 4 million people, we are still struggling? And also, what structural economic reform we can really stand with and say they have assisted to take Namibia to the next level? And when countries such as Zimbabwe have a plan of becoming upper middle income by 2030, what is our plan as a country? And also to say, did complying with international standard really assisted us? Are we using the right formula, or are we using the wrong formula? But those who are going to answer those questions are those who have been at the center of research, those who have been a center of data, and also those who understand the necessity of data-driven development. In order to ask critical questions to say why the voices are becoming the voices of promises, particularly looking at how we started very well in 2025, and we'll bring in things such as delay in project development that eventually also mean a delay in human development. We'll speak on the aspect of things such as upgrading of Namibian stadiums. There was a communication last year, and I remember correctly where our deputy minister of sport was saying Namibia will play, or Brevelius will play at home by the end of the year. But now we are almost at the end of the second year. What is the progress in that aspect, and at what rate are we moving? So that will be very necessary, especially to look at if what we've been doing for the past 36 years is really upgrading human development. And also, are we still dealing with the basics, or we have gone somewhere? And also not to downplay the role of what has been done, and also those who have been assisted. But the question should always be to say, when it comes to our country, why at the best moment in Africa, we are still very slow to get where we want to get into? But that will be unpacked in the next in 8 minutes. But before we go there, let us look at what is happening in the continent of Africa. It is stated that the Mali government reject U.S. role in anti-jihadist fight. United States of America is giving an offer to the government of Mali, especially when it comes to fighting terrorism. However, the government of Mali has rejected that. They have indicated that the fight against jihadists will not be in collaboration with U.S. It is noted that at a conference in Bamako on Thursday, Mali Foreign Minister, that is Adolai Diomb, has indicated that Trump administration was considering military action in the country On Wednesday, signed the current and former U.S. official that administration is weighing possible actions against the jihadist, the Al-Qaeda affiliate in Mali. So that is what is happening, especially looking at that aspect. But looking into that context, the foreign minister said Mali only heard about the news on potential U.S. military action from press report. We have no confirmation in our official statement. That is what's happening in the continent of Africa. You know, one of the things that has been debated is that who is funding terrorists in Africa? And the other aspect is that where are the minerals that terrorists are taking from Africa being sold to? How do they enter the international market? And also to say, is a Western assistant the real assistant, or is just a card that is being played? And also to ask to say, is African Union not be able to assist its own people? Because we have seen what happened in DRC, what has been happening in DRC. You realize to say, the terrorists have more guns, have advanced weapons than even the government. And you realize that once the terrorists and their sponsors are not in good terms, and they are not going according to how things have been going. Now the question is that, is this going to be a solution, or is it going to be another problem? One of the things that we should also look at when you look at terrorism and also development of the country is that terrorism is also contributing to international business in a wrong way, especially where you have companies that are in charge of selling weapons, ammunitions, and also advanced technology such as drone. But at the same time, you also realize that if Africa is not careful, especially when you read the report from Africa security, you know, studies, you start realizing that the global impact of the war in Iran will also fuel continuation of terror in the African, African continent. So that is one of the things that we need to look at, especially when it comes to the aspect of security. So for now, let's look at a short commercial break. Then in 5 minutes, we'll be able to be in contact with Theo, especially to help us unpack the aspect of to say, when are we really going to say we have moved? Especially when it comes to human beings, you know, in Namibia, because human development is at the center of everything. If you have beautiful infrastructure, beautiful buildings, you have airlines, but it's not your people that are using those airlines, or 80% of the people that are in your country cannot be able to afford air transportation, then what are you doing? If you have smart cars, EVs, and everything in Namibia, but it's only with 2% of your people, where are you going? And what is the danger of delayed advancement in human development? So let's look at a short commercial break and come back shortly.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any other
station. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano hile koshiwala. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi to danjuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o speciala ngeta shake ngeshe faa omarudi tayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwa tafanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM VI.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Lipura nengelo wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano hile koshiwala. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi to danjuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o speciala ngeta shake ngeshe faa omarudi tayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwa tafanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM VI.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve.
Yeah, we are moving forward with unpicking the day. And today we are looking at a discussion that are really bothering us, but they are necessary discussion that policymakers must not only have but must prioritize. And we are looking at discussion that should not only be in academia but also discussion that should be at the practical level, especially if you want to advance Namibia human development. We have spoken about it for quite a very long time, but we are still asking ourselves to say, why are we complying with international standard but we are not saving our own people? I'm joined on the line by Theo Erastus Nakasore. He's a senior research analyst. He's a policy analyst too, especially from Monasa Advisory, just to assist us, especially with what has been happening around. Theo Nakasore, good morning, and thank you for joining us.
Yes, good morning, and thank you for having me. Let me also greet the Eagle FM listeners, and it's always a privilege to have me in your program.
Mm-hmm. Let's start with it. We have been looking at records. We have been seeing, some of the good news about Namibia, especially when you look at international standard. We comply. We recently got removed from grey listing. We are doing very well in terms of gender equality. In terms of financial inclusion, we are part of the good countries that are doing very well, particularly looking at those who have been disadvantaged, such as women and all these things. Now, the question that I want to start with is that it's something that I'm always asking economists to say. Why at the moment where Africa contain one of or most of the fastest growing economies in the world, Namibia continue to fall behind? And why is it so difficult to bridge that gap of economic inequality, especially among the Namibian people?
Yeah, no, thank you very much, Mr. Shombe, for the questions. And I think the starting point, really, it should be looking at this holistically, in a sense that we ought to do some of certain things in an African way as well, and not only to subscribe to, you know, other foreign and international standard. Yes, we are part of the global economy, and obviously we will be benchmarked based on the standard that they have set. But the most important thing to note is that it's also important to acknowledge, you know, the colonial past that we have all gone through, you know, as African or, and also like as a country, of which at some point in one way or another, you know, it has exacerbated this form of be it inequality,
yeah,
be it of exclusion and so forth. So, but it really takes leadership.
Yeah,
it really takes some sort of accountability and transparency in bringing about, you know, the change that we desire. Of course, just to give as a starting point, looking at Namibia and South Africa, you know, we have, how should I say, a common, you know, inequality that we obviously bequeathed from the colonial past that we have went through.
Yeah.
That's why even if you look at things like land, you look at things like ownership of properties and, you know, some of the main resources, the main players in the economies, you know, it really tells a lot, you know, in that aspect. But then the question comes as to, yes, how many years after independence?
Yeah.
It has been couples of years now.
Yeah.
More than two decades and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
How do we ensure that we reverse some of these things? It's worth noting and acknowledging, yes, some of the policy initiatives that some of our government are really likely to realize and tap into. Just for instance, like in Namibia, we have now the emerging oil and gas industry. We have things like green hydrogen, and the mining, obviously, that we cannot, you know, try by all means to sidestep. So, but by looking at some of these emerging, you know, industries, the government is trying to push for some sort of, you know, localizations, empowerment, you know, of the locals. As you have heard, we have what we call like the local content policy, as to really much trying by all means to ensure that how do we make sure that we don't just, you know, do extractive, promote extractive industry, but we should ensure that, you know, this benefit really stay, you know, with the people, you know, in the country.
Yeah.
And also you want to paint the picture in the sense that you want transparency and inclusion to play a role. Because you can have a very good policy, but if there are no empowerments, if there are no scorecards, you know, to benchmark and track, you know, in terms of who are the really people that you would like to take part in this kind of, you know, industry, it will really remain a very good policy on paper, but in practice it is going to be ineffective. I think those are some of the areas that I could perhaps just try to briefly paint for now as a picture.
Yeah, now, just before we go into detail, let us look at the delay, the human development. When you look around Namibia, you see better infrastructure such as roads. You see schools are being built. You also see better, you know, infrastructure when it comes to building offices and other aspects. But when you look at individuals themselves, you ask yourself a question to say, why is it so very difficult to take people out of poverty? Why do we have a budget that is so much a social welfare budget than a budget that's looking at industrialization? And also, why do you have, for example, a recent data where you have only 8% of Namibians who are earning more than 11,000 Namibian dollars? Why do we have that until now? And what is the danger of that? Because I want to see the aspect of agency in dealing with human development. What is the danger of that if it continue to be like that as population grows?
No, yes, your observation is really quite right. And I think let me answer it this way.
Yeah.
You know, the economic growth of any country is measured by its GDP.
Yeah.
And we need to look at what is GDP. You know, GDP is made up of, or let me say, it's a component of all your consumption. It's a component of all your investment. It's a component of all your government expenditure.
Yeah.
You know, your export, you know, minus import, you know, or let me put it that way. But, you know, that figure, whatever, you know, it produce, whatever addition it produce, the only challenge it has, it does not explicitly state how well off each and every individual in that specific country is.
Yeah.
That's why you encounter, you know, a situation where you may have an economic growth in the country, but you still have people that are, you know, trapped in poverty, you know, people that are, and that is a question of inclusivity.
Mm-hmm.
And for you to drive that, you ought to have some sort of policy measurements, which is looking into, you know, a transparency and inclusion and accountability of some sort of. Because if you do not have those kind of, you know, policy measurement in place, you will end up, you know, only a certain individual. In other words, they call it, let me say, those that are politically connected, that will be able to make it. But the rest of the people, they will not be, you know, very much, you know, included in that. And also the other important thing is also about, you know, skill mismatch in education. Education is very much important. Because once we have a population that is really fully empowered, they will have the capacity to make a choice. You know, they will have the capacity, you know, to tap into industry that they understand. But if you have, for instance, institutions that are still offering, let me say, more of the theory-based, you know, studies, other than which speaks to, let me say, green hydrogen, which speaks to oil and gas, you will come across a situation where you have either more of the most of the people, they call it like a brain drain, where you have most of the people from other countries, you know, coming in. Let me not use the word foreign, coming in, you know, taking up, you know, some of this high, you know, position in those kind of institutions because they do understand what is going on. And you will have a junior, most of the junior people that are doing this kind of work. You know, why is because a lack of skill, a lack of empowerment. And I think that's also some of the criteria that as a government need to look at. And the other thing also like is access to finance.
Yeah.
What are the modalities that are there now currently in place in order to ensure that someone in Okangwati or someone in Kurenkuru, you know, can be able to get a loan if he or she want to venture into some sort of small and medium enterprises? Because now you ask this person a collateral.
Yeah.
So, you know, what is a collateral? You need to have some sort of like, you know, already existing housing or something.
So you need to help for you to get something.
And it drags. That's like you are asking somebody who is applying for a position. You know, you must have at least 5 or 10 years experience. If you have some of those kind of skill criteria that exist, that do not give a provision, you know, to those that do not have those kind of experience or, you know, property as they require. If you are not trying to loosen that belt, still you are, you know, you are still exacerbating that, you know, that gap. So I think there is a need to revisit into some of, you look at what is the major contribute to the Namibian economy. Of course, you have your things like your mining, you know, you have your things like your tourism, you have your things like fishing.
Yeah.
But if you were to really go deep and look, you know, the number of employment that mining take as compared to, for instance, retail and industry.
Yeah.
It's totally different.
Yeah.
So you have to look at, okay, now, if mining contribute much, but it's not be able to absorb, you know, most of our people, in which sector we need to ensure that maybe we give some sort of incentive to ensure that if you have, for instance, your manufacturing, why can't you make sure that we give some sort of incentives and ensure that we open up a room for special economic zone as they have proposed now, which is quite a good thing, to ensure that you attract more investors to come in the countries and look at also into some of the regions which are really very much impoverished as compared to others, like the four old regions like Kavangos. Mm. You know, if you look at the 2023 statistics, those are some of the regions that high unemployment.
Yeah.
And if you're only concentrating on urban centers or concentrating in commerce or concentrating in Erongo, so your inequality will still exist. And you need to ensure that for you to uproot, you took a holistic approach, you know, that is regionally based. Mm. You know, what should each region do to ensure that you help this kind of situation?
Indeed, I want to take you back. You mentioned a very important point about education, and it has been indicated to say education is a greatest equalizer. Now, looking at where you have people that graduated, for example, in 2014 with degrees and diplomas from 2014 there until now, they do not have jobs, and by the time this person is called for an interview, for example, then the curriculum has also changed, and a lot of factors have already changed in the economy. You have AI, you have new things have already phased out. Now, how from where you are standing, how do you utilize already educated population but without opportunity? What is the best way to accommodate these people? Because you cannot have somebody who studied public management, for example, or business administration. And yes, it can be in the agriculture sector due to changing of circumstances, but that is not what the person was supposed to be at. How do you make sure that you move forward? And also not leaving behind those who have already certain skills, especially where we are now.
Thank you. It's a very good question, but maybe let me, I might be so brutal honest, but what one need to understand is that, you know, the primary role of the government is not directly, you know, to absorb or to recruit or to to absorb these people that, you know, that do not have opportunity.
Yeah.
The primary role for the government is to create a conducive environment where the economy can thrive. And how will that economy thrive? You need to make sure that you have policy, you have, laws that, you know, ensure that you attract investors, you have laws that ensure that, you know, you don't want to have a situation where year in, year out, the government announces the national budget is how much, but at the end of the day, a big chunk is, you know, directed to education, but there is no like an output, you know, to that input that the government is making. In other words, you might say it will be a wasteful expenditure if we are not really trying to ensure that we look at where we put our money. Yes. And in that situation, as I have also just explained, is that the role of the government is to create a conducive environment where, you know, you have more businesses, you have more people with capacity that are empowered. So if somebody is graduated, you know, you don't need to remain there as a beggar, but you can be able to have, you know, come up with something very creative that mm. can be able to help you and to help the next person. Mm. But that will only happen if we have an environment that is well structured and that is not only looking into one side of the coin. And for you to really, you know, address and redress that is to ensure that first and foremost, you know, the people that have, let me say, like people that have, you know, graduated, you ought to have some sort of survey to say, like, what area can we make in order to ensure that we create this kind of opportunity? Because, as I said, the government cannot be able to take up of all the unemployed graduates that are roaming around in the street. But that has to be done through, you know, opportunity, economic opportunity that the government can be able to create. Just for instance, like this oil and gas that we have going to come now. So you would like to make sure that, how do we ensure that we know some of these are capital intensive industry, but want to create a supply value chain, some sort of, where you accommodate the catering, the welding, the you know, all these people, let me say, from vocational training incentives. So you that's where your primary focus should be in order to ensure that at least somewhere, somehow, you are assisting in mitigating some of these issues. Yeah. And also another maybe one more thing that the government need to have a look at is to ensure that we provide proper, you know, courses in these high institutions so that we ensure that we don't end up having a more of a skill mismatch. Yes, we have a lot of people that are educated in this or that specialize in a specific field, but there are no opportunity out there, you know, where those people, they can be recruited. So it's already creating, as I said, like a wasteful expenditure if you don't look like the end, you know, side of the story of that kind of approach. So I think those are some of just the key areas that I could point for now.
No, it's a very good thing that you brought that thing. You know, me, I like moving around and visiting places. And one thing that I have seen is that you can go to a place, especially at social gathering events. Then you find somebody who is speaking a Queen's English. You think this person maybe studied in Britain. Then you ask yourself to say, but why are you just here drinking? The person say, no, I have this qualification, but there is no opportunity, which is really paining me. Now, let's go to the other question that is also linked to this. I want to ask you a very difficult question. There are times where we speak about supply and demand, skills mismatch, and there are also times where we are going to the fire, and we know exactly that we are going to the fire. There are certain courses in Namibia that there are still people that are being taken. There are intakes that are being taken. The government is also watching. But you know exactly that within that field, there is already oversupply. Then why do you think the Minister of Education or the government itself, especially the cabinet itself, cannot make a strategic decision to say, let us stop for now this and absorb what we have? Because there are certain courses that you already have thousands and ten thousands of graduate that are in the street, and opportunities are not there, but institutions are still doing it. Now, what is the best way to deal with this? Because at some point you can also see, no, you cannot block this institution to do their intake, but the other thing, you also know exactly what you need in your market.
No, it's a very interesting question and mind-boggling at the same time as well, and especially given where we are and where we come from.
Yeah.
I always used to give an example to say, if you look our unemployment trend ever since independence, you know, it has been nosediving at some point and it picked up. And that also tells you that, you know, from since independence, there were a lot of, you know, infrastructure development.
Yeah.
That are taking place, and that's for that specific reason you have that. And I think you also remember in 2009, there was also some sort of shortage of, you know, in the teaching space.
Yeah.
There was a shortage where, you know, the government was even looking for, as long as somebody has certain skills, you know, can be able to teach, because there was a shortage.
Yeah.
But then later on, you came to realize now that there is an oversupply in that industry where you have most of the people. Imagine one position and more than 200 to 400 people are being called.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you ask yourself a question, are we really serious?
Yeah.
Would you really tell me for a one position, you will be able to pick up the best candidate out of the 400 people? What are you going to do? What kind of model, if I were to ask you?
Yeah.
So sometimes you really think, I think some of these things need to be revisited and be looked at, and also just to ensure that at the area where there are a comparative advantage, need to be taken care of. You know, let me say, if in the Kovango region, you know, there is a premier, I mean, rivers and so forth, how do we ensure that even the agricultural sector that is in that specific area, you know, is well taken advantage of, so that people that have been in the agriculture space could be able to absorb that. Then you have your Napatal Dam, that's like, how do we ensure that we set up these farms and so forth, go to a poor agriculture and so forth. So I think once you do, once you dissect, you know, that problem, you know, regionally, then you will also be able to curb, you know, the urbanization problem that you are facing, because most of the people now, they are leaving rural area, coming to urban area for those opportunities. Why?
Yeah, yeah.
Because in rural area, there are no opportunities. But by the moment you happen to come up with some of those regional initiatives to say, each region should be able to come up with a certain identified project which speaks to our national development plan, which is NDPC, then in that sense, you are driving everyone, you know, together. You won't have this kind of migration and so forth. And as I say, capacity building is also very much important. Access to finance is very much important to those people. You know, they are just those people that are not educated, but the person is very much creative and can be able to come up with something new. And economically, they normally say, your economy can only grow if you increase the value of goods and services, you know, in that specific country. And for that to increase, you need to create value, you need to create product, you need to come up with something that you do not have, because you cannot keep on doing the same things over and over and expect to get a different result. That won't work. Yeah. So you have to come up with some sort of, just like there's a very good book, it's written, you know, China's great strategy, on how China conquered the world.
Yeah.
You know, America has been dominating, but China happened to sit on the table and try to come up with initiatives on how should we ensure that we empower our people. They come up with things like production management, where they send their people to go and study where else. That's why most of the Chinese, they are all over the world.
Yeah.
And they are selling and they are in business.
Mm.
Why? Because they are more empowered. But as for us, we are still in the, you know, employment mindset, because we do understand, we do not, sometimes, yes, a person has the potential, but by the moment that person is not empowered, he will not believe in she or he what can do. And I think some of those things need to be ticked.
Yeah.
So that we ensure that we are really in a good trajectory. And the second thing is, or maybe the fourth is, you know, we have also the issue of policy and timing lag. You know, by the moment NSA released the national their labor survey, let me say in 2023, to say our unemployment is here. We have maybe a policy or a law that is being drafted, which is going to take more years, you know, for it to be effective. And they normally say, like, a delayed, you know, development,
yeah.
it also hamper into some of these issues of inequality and poverty and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, currently do we have a policy in place which look into those?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we have the National Development Plan. We have the Vision 2030, which is now in 3 or 4 years, you know, coming to an end.
Yeah.
And I have seen that the National Planning Commission trying to come up with another, you know, a strategic objective, which is beyond, you know, 2030. I'm under the assumption that these are some of the things they look at to say, what are some of the recurring, you know, things that we have been doing for the past National Development Plan ever since their inception in 2004 or 5, if I'm not mistaken, there, up to now, that you can be able to do differently.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as I said, by the moment you keep on doing something over and over, you can have a very good policy in place.
Yeah.
But practically and on the ground, people are suffering. People are not having jobs. You don't want more Namibians. They keep on going to South Africa. Now they are being repatriated because of xenophobia.
Yeah.
Most of the people are going to Europe and, you know, to look for opportunity. And you ask yourself, as a country, how many are we? We are just 2 million.
Yeah.
And I think, clearly, we need to take a holistic approach, which is about diversifications and empowerment, and also in ensuring that by as far as we are having this good policy in place, accountability and transparency are in place, and check and balances are in place to ensure that, yes, these people are really absorbed in the economy so that they can be better in the society.
Yeah, just last three, before we look at what Namibia is doing well, because there are things that we are doing well. You spoke about research and statistics. The voice of statistics is becoming louder, and we are seeing a lot of institutions are now focusing. They are speaking more on statistics and research. From where you are standing, are we responding to the data that we have, especially when we speak about evidence-based decision, or we are just focusing more on continue diagonizing our problems? Because numbers are there. Number has been there of what is happening in the informal sector, what is happening in the financial industry, who has more money is an unbanking sector, who is being delayed and all these things. Are we moving beyond the numbers? And what can be done, again, to strengthen research, but not only research and collecting of data, but evidence-based decision?
I'm always a great believer to say you cannot, you know, prescribe medication to a patient without, you know, diagnosing that patient. Because then at the end of the day, you might solve a wrong problem.
Yeah.
And research and development is very crucial and critical if you look into some of the developed countries. Look at Norway, you look at Singapore, you look at Luxembourg, you look at, you know, even just China.
Yeah.
You know, they make their decision based on what their statistics are telling them.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can have a very good policy, but maybe you are addressing, you know, a wrong problem, or maybe that's a symptom, not the cause of the problem. And I think we should be able to really capitalize on the data that we have, so just so that we make sure that we come up with a better solution. Just an example, as I said, you look on the, you know, the labor force survey that the NSA, you know, just published, and you look at where is the highest unemployment, for instance, you will get the results. Then you can say, what is the problem? Is it education? Is it, you know, access to infrastructures or know-how? Or is it access to finance? So once you come up, you know, with that conclusion, then you can be able to come up with a better recommendation. Because at the end of the day, you have for instance, the governor, they always do like the state of their regional address, where they talk of what they have achieved and what they want to go do. But at the same time, also, me from an economic perspective, I go to the, I go to the statistics or the NSA. Is it some of the, you know, provision or maybe proposal that the governor is putting there really speak to the problem that that region is facing? So that's how it will set the issue.
Is it speaking to the
issue? Yeah, you can, you cannot speak less than, you know, it also tell you like, yes, maybe you don't know whether, you know, that specific, you know, speech is crafted elsewhere. But as I said, we ought to really face the reality and we should give a recommendation based on statistic and research, because that's the only way be able to improve the situation.
Now it's a good thing that you brought the aspect of, you know, especially at the regional level, to us to say, is the speech political or the speech is evidence-based, or the speech is just to make people happy? There are speech that, you know, there are people who are born orators, can make you happy and forget all your problems, but when you go home, you realize that in the fridge there is still nothing. Last three. There are always things that we are doing very well in Namibia, and that we should continue doing very well. Looking at the way you are standing, what do you think there are some of the things that Namibia still have, and Namibia is still doing very well, and we should continue doing them, especially if we want to get where we want to get into? What are some of the qualities that the country still have that other people are dying to get, and that we should maintain that while we are dealing with our own problems?
No, thanks for the question. Yes, we need to be, despite some of the challenges that we keep on facing or that we are facing, we acknowledge, you know, and be proud of who we are as a country. We are enjoying a stable you know, political environment, you know, and no one will want to come and invest in a country that is politically unstable. And I think the level of transparency and is also there, the free press, you know, the freedom of speech, those are some of the things that each and every Namibian, as far as my concern, cannot be able to sweep under the carpet. That's the truth. And for any Indian investor out there, be it he's from Chile or South America or elsewhere, those are some of the things that they look at. If I'm to put maybe 50 million in this country, am I guaranteed that I will be able to get a better, you know, return on that? How is the environment? I think those are some of the first thing that we do. And, you know, education-wise, yes, the literacy rate in Namibia have also improved you know, over the years, even though I don't have the statistics here. But as I said, the only question is, you know, are we giving the people, you know, the right skills, the educations, and so forth? I think that's there's a question mark there that we need to look at. And we have our natural resources, of which no one can take them away from us. But we just need to conserve them and capitalize on them. You have your minerals. How do we ensure that we add value so that we don't just export our gold, you know, our diamond, our lithium, our, you know, uranium in raw form, because other people, they are using them to, you know, build, you know, make cars, you know, to make batteries and so forth. You want those you don't want those opportunities to be exported in that fashion. You want to see how do we ensure that, you know, we partner with this, you know, industrial players so that they ensure that they come, you know, set up plant and so forth. We also have our you know, fishing and, You know, we have a tourism, which is also quite, you know, doing great.
Yeah.
And we have, the only challenge we have is manufacturing.
Yeah.
I think that is the really area in agro-processing that we need to really make sure that we tap into. And we need to ensure that we unlock those opportunities. Because, as I said, in the past, we have been relying much more on the mining, which has been contributing around 13%, you know, to our GDP. But if you look ever since from 2024, I'm not talking about COVID-19 and so forth, 2024, 2025, you know, our mining contribution to GDP, reduced, and you ask yourself as a question now, if you are only depending on one key sector, what about the others? What if something happened, you know, how should we ensure that we diversify our economy so that we ensure that we have both manufacturing and so forth? Because in industry like manufacturing, that is the area where you really get or that are more of labor intensive, even though we have the technology now, which is emerging, and also agriculture. So I think we need to capitalize on that and just to ensure that we grow our economy, we empower our people, and nobody is left behind, as the mantra that our political leaders always make.
Yes. Dear Erastus Narastore, thank you for joining us. Thank you for those valuable input. And we'll keep in touch. We'll keep in communication. And
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Shombe.
All right.
Always pleasure.
Bye. Yeah, that is Dio Nakasore. He's a senior analyst and looking at the data, looking at the aspect of human development. So need to look at what can we do better. Then they also indicated about things that Namibia is doing very well, especially when it comes to development. But the other thing that also look at, you mentioned the aspect of freedom of speech and also expression. Look at the peace. You know, in other countries, we wouldn't speak like this. We would be speaking under the table. But this is also something that when you look at the country, there are things that we are maintaining. And also spoke more on data-driven development. Not only to speak about political ambitions, but to speak about the real evidence that can inform decision. Speak about the areas of Kavango. Regions, the two Kavango regions, called the two mighty Kavango regions, to say, regardless of looking at, for example, Kavango West, most of green schemes being there. And you look at the statistic rate, the level of unemployment, you really ask yourself a question to say, are we only using data to put them on the table, or we are using data to come up with data-driven, decision? Let us look at a short commercial break, then we'll give you, let's look at the call and come back. Good morning.
Good morning, King David.
Yes, Angabwana, how are you?
Fine, thank you. Oh, how are you now?
Open the door, Pauli.
Oh, I have to go to the house. I have to go to the house. I have to go to the house.
I have to go to the house.
Yeah, oh, Morodi, I'm doing it. I know that. So, thank God for bringing Theo.
Yeah.
Nagasole.
Yeah.
And I'm very impressed. I think it's not the first time I'm listening to him. He's somebody who you know can really rely on in terms of dissemination of information. Data-based, we are saying research-based decision, data. And we are very good, we are very happy to get this kind of education, and that is actually education. The one that, of course, I understand, the one that is structured so somehow, like you do at UNAM and many other institutions.
Yeah.
I'm not undermining or despising what they are doing. They are doing a good job.
Yeah.
That's why we are able to speak even on the radio like this.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about structuring now some of this curriculum. So this curriculum development is very crucial.
Yeah.
Because you obviously predict, most of this time you predict.
Yeah.
The prediction is very important. At least 5, 6, 10 years from now, you pose a very important question, critical, that yes, why is it that, when the graduates come, after 4, 3 years down the line, you don't have a job, you might, the knowledge may somehow become what they call obsolete. So now it's somehow disappearing because we may not have been given that practical, because it's theory and practice. Not theory, it's practice. So, and we need to make sure that those who are coming in may be finding that, yes, the emerging sectors, oil and gas, this upstream, this opportunity that I can, because some of the economic diversification that he is talking about,
yeah,
you should apply to all industries, especially the mining. So they need to make sure that they diversify their economic activities to the rural areas, because everything should be decentralized. Even if there are no mining in those rural areas there. Some of them have these kunenes and all these things, the four regions that are being spoken about. But there are other area economic activity that can be done there. There is economic opportunity that are there. Who is taking them to the people, to the periphery area, Who is taking them there?
And the only question that... we should all ask, it's a question of what is my role? Maybe we do not understand our role in the whole system, because one thing that you see that during election, a politician can stand up and say, I'm going to create this kind of employment, I'm going to build new houses, I don't want to see this kambashus anymore and all these things. Then we all clap hands and we are going to slaughter that goat or that cow and we go home. Now, after elections, then we are at the real development. Then we say, yes, I understand you. I'm here to make sure that the environment is conducive. But it's actually the private sector that was supposed to create jobs. Then you ask yourself a question to say, where is the private sector getting the money from? No, the private sector has to get the money from the financial sector. And who owns the financial sector? Are this money really owned by Namibians? And are they giving money to Namibians to build this country? Then you start asking yourself a question, because we are fighting each other. Maybe we should also redefine our roles to say, what is my role as a young graduate? What is my role as a retired professional? What is the role of a retired politician? Maybe we can get it that way, because at the end of the day, we all end up moving in a circle, then we are blaming each other.
Yes, correctly said. You have mentioned it, that we need to redefine our roles.
Yeah.
And find out, ask ourselves a question.
Yeah.
What is my stake in there? And it has been spoken during that governance and consultation meeting that you were talking about. All these people, the stakeholders came together.
Yeah.
And many a time, most of these meetings, stakeholders are held by stakeholders.
Yeah.
Like you made a reference to the National Planning Commission. I've been following their presentation and all these other things.
Yeah.
So, of course, it's true. We need to redefine our role, our responsibilities, and those obligations we always talk about. As much as we know our rights, and understand, many a times we know, even the adult literacy that was said there, I used to teach this, to facilitate, actually, not to teach, facilitate adult literacy.
Yeah.
In Babylon.
Yeah.
Those in former settlement where we were. And you see that the way you craft up your lesson plan, it should make sure that it's really, it does fit the need of those people there.
Yeah, and also, you know, people must also understand, for example, when you look at the regional development, you must know that, for example, when you listen to this state of regional address, a governor is, at our political structure now, and we say this with much respect, a governor is an employee within the presidency, if you have to look at it that way. And his job is, although it's regional leadership, most of the time is to make sure that it's representative of the president within that region. And it's not necessary to say creating of jobs, but is he facilitating the environment to be so conducive so that the private sector can come in? Because if you pressure the governor, and we see them reporting to say, no, 20 jobs were created here, some are skilled, some are permanent. But you start asking a question to say, are your roles redefined? Are they defined?
Yeah, you see, when people were laughing and all this, and they were mocking at Trump's first,
yeah,
and start making the mocking at the, our president, mm, President Nandi Daitwa, when he went to China.
Mm.
Because sometimes in their own cultural, you know, so you have to be greeted here and all this by the governor. Mm. And the way that the France was telling us, the governor there, mm, and many other countries,
mm,
is leading about 4 million people or more than that.
Yeah. No, even 10.
You see now,
yeah.
10.
Yeah.
And the kind of development when you get there, it's like you have gone to another town, and maybe where, I don't know whether it's London, maybe you can just say Windhoek now in our own case.
Mm, mm, mm.
So this regional planning, you know, regional, you mentioned it with your, Tio also mentioned it, and I'm on that one.
Yeah.
So in all the regions, there are massive kind of resources that are there. You started with the human capacity, human development.
Yeah.
Then the capacity building is being mentioned there as a critical issue. So I think if we can redefine our role, all of us, and the governor is there to be assisted by you people who are there. If we understand our role,
yeah,
then we are able to engage with the governor at our own local level there.
Mm-hmm.
They say, these are some of the strategic objectives in 20 that you mentioned, 2030, or any other thing. Because 2030, even if it's coming to an end, it does not mean the needs are no longer going to be there. The challenges are going to be there.
No,
the inequality that we are talking about is going to be there. So, of course, as we has been said, we have inherited these things, even the laws and all these other things, but we can still avoid some of these international standards that we are talking about that we are not adhering to or complying to. We are complying,
but
they are also giving you some pressure.
Yeah.
So to do our own standards.
So you are not focusing on yourself.
Because you are no longer focusing on yourself.
You
want to find, because you are going to report at the OU UN in Wales. So I think those things, obviously,
we need the self-confidence also sometimes.
Very much.
Yeah.
Very much.
Yeah.
So it's true.
Yeah.
Yes, because of the universally and the all global things and what we can ascribe to them.
Yeah.
But they shouldn't deviate us. Look at the GDP that was mentioned by Theo there.
Mm.
That measurement itself is completely wrong. It gives us a wrong picture. And therefore, we think that, yes, GDP is growing, and all the people who are not employed, underemployed, and all these other things who are not getting anything, they are also included in that figure.
It's very misleading. You know, we are on the right page, especially when you talk about international standard. I'm not saying we should not comply with international standard, but we should ask ourselves to say, before compliance and after compliance, did it change us? Yeah, did they change us? I'm not saying we should be grey listed. It's not what we are saying. But we prioritize so much to that extent we forget ourselves. Who are we serving?
Yes, we can learn it. We can learn something. You know, this benchmark and things like that, a good lesson and things like that. But what we are saying is that even the...
Namibia was praised in London because we are one of the most peaceful and all these things, freedom of press, which is quite good. Or we comply and they thank us. And the question is that before and after compliance, did it change the thing of bread and butter? Now with financial inclusion, we are at 86%. We overtake a lot of countries. Even Rwanda. I still need to look at the data. And women are leading in terms of financial inclusion. But the question is that, is inclusion meaning the change in the lives of human beings, or things just become worse?
If you read the article that is written by Dr. Erison Chirahi, you know, my colleagues that I have worked with, very intelligent young men. Talking about the
Chirena.
Erison. Erison is a senior lecturer in sociology at the University of Namibia. So, and then you see now the disparity between, so you mentioned about gender equality. So our focus has always been, at our work, that yes, gender equality and equity. Now people should be talking about gender equity. So equality and all these things, those figures, they lie. Unless they are really examined properly, like what I have jotted here when you were talking about those data and things like that. So I was actually mentioning a point that
which data are lying?
So many a times when you say gender equality, so let's say for example gender equality and coupled with our educational goal, for example, democracy, equality, access, and all these other things. So now many people, they tell you that 50-50%, you don't discriminate. But when you just now properly and examine those data, analyze them properly, sex disaggregated, put them on that form, for example, you discover that people are not, they are not, the resources is not equitably distributed there.
I hear you.
When they say GDP, we are getting good and we are all things like, you know, Namibia is just ranking nice. Perhaps they use GDP figure, which they think everybody in Namibia is receiving anything. Many of our people don't receive anything.
No, those are things
that... Even young ones, they don't receive anything.
I hear you.
Nothing. So what we are saying is that even this, we're talking about now the education, the goals. So when you go to university there, how many people are graduating from the gender perspective? Women, boys, things like that, and all these things. Of course, when they enter, they all get saying, and even say 50-50%. But what is the outcome? Does it give you a true picture?
No, it's a good question that that you are bringing about, and let's see how things are.
In conclusion, in
final analysis.
In final analysis. So I hope have you been following? I hope I'm not even missing that impeachment.
No, I was even checking it now. They are giving the judgment, I think, at the 10.
Oh, it's 10. Please, let me not miss those things. Eh?
No,
so, and in the final analysis,
to sum up.
You have got, it's a wonderful program, but you know, it's just a wonderful program. So now, how I wanted to, because your questions here are so critical and
the oversupply, I won't go and buy it. So I think it has been mentioned.
Yeah.
And also one of these things, how do we, this regional based kind of planning.
Yeah.
So the governors, they have been giving those kind of things. And we still want to see more kind of projects being done. And the young people are also not responding. The president, Nene Coroneria Silunga in the president's office, he is also calling you people to come. The local content and all these things, even if you have a policy or don't have a policy, some of these things, is calling you to come. And people are not getting in oil and gas, those kind of upstream.
No, it's true.
Why? Is it not you are not organizing yourself?
We must
or is it clearly that the fact that yes, access to funding, I understand. Even when this funding that I'm seeing is from 18 years to 35 to 34 or 35 years old, only 200 people have applied. Today is 24th, is the deadline, isn't it? 200. Are you telling me that in each of these regions, how many people have applied now? If you have to sum up with you to add the thing, to aggregate the thing.
Hold on, just hold on.
This winter, Washamba Mall is turning your shopping into winning. Spend 200 Namibian dollars or more at any shop in Washamba Mall and you could win a 500 Namibian dollars shopping voucher every Friday. The more you shop, the more chances you have to win. Don't miss out. Visit Washamba Mall in Ondangwa from 3rd to 31st July 2026. Shop, enter your till slip with your name and number into the competition box located in the mall. And stand a chance to win a shopping voucher from Washamba Mall. Don't miss our lucky winner live draw on Eagle FM every Friday from 1500 hours.
Your conclusion look like a literature review.
You know what? When I present my things,
no.
I think people who should be going for interview now, they should also be preparing there. We make some kind of slight kind of presentation.
No, I'm saying your conclusion is looking like a literature review. Let's sum up.
Oh, because we're looking at actually. So, you know, it is actually us who are causing this kind of instability. You started with that country where the Americans are saying, even if you come up with a good idea,
yeah.
Let's say now, like in DRC, it is our people who are complaining for the peace not to be mundane in those countries. They demonstrate, like in Namibia here.
Now I want to look at Mali, for example. When you look at... when you look at, for example, the jihadist, the rebels have M5, you know, these American weapons.
Yes.
Then if you see the rebels have drones, M5, and bulletproofs made in by American companies, and you are coming and say, no, I want to come and assist you guys to fight these guys. Who supplied them on the other side?
Yeah, so you now ask those countries. Yeah. So, but ourselves also.
Yeah.
To be allowed to be supplied with those weapons and hit and hit each other and start fighting.
No, war is a profitable business to those who are selling weapons.
Yes,
yeah.
It's a profitable business. But why should you now allow yourself and even being so much anti? Because I know if that war, it's just that, yes, even South Africa tried and things like that, and I know South Africa is very powerful, it's just because maybe they also don't not want to cause more social and political chaos. If the same apply. But we are just saying, yes, the war, let Nigeria deal with their own things. Let this other one deal with their own things. And we cannot even organize and come up with a very formidable kind of an army, whatever. That can really prevent, of course, negotiate and things like that, but people are dying.
All right.
Cool.
Yeah,
It's 33 minutes past the hour of 9. We are moving forward with Unpacking the Day with me, David Shombe. We are here until the hour of 11. And you can still engage us in the studio at 083-288-401-083-288-401 so that you give your constructive criticism and also engage us. And the other aspect that we are looking at is accountability in South Africa, to say from 10 o'clock there, keep on watching to say, is the president of South Africa going to be allowed to review the Parapara report, or he is going to be allowed to face parliament? And it's going to be interesting to see, to say the president of South Africa has 30 minutes, especially to redefine, or there's 30 minutes to redefine the presidency of South Africa once faced with impeachment committee. The possibility is very high that he's going to resign, and we are yet to see. And also, you know, in politics, they say you are allowed to die many times as long as you are waking up, because there's always a political comeback. Which cut is under the table, especially looking at the judgment of Western Cape High Court, to look at can the president of South Africa win the report contestation against former Chief Justice? Can really the former Chief Justice be wrong? But human beings are human beings. And also to look at your representative of Cyril Ramaphosa in that case, you have a senior counsel. And it's something that I have seen, especially when you look at how broad, how big is the judicial system of South Africa. You have senior counsel, then senior counsel are assisted by their attorneys. Then you also have advocates, if you are senior lawyers, you realize to say, you cannot go to the battle of gun with a knife. That's why an attorney should assist an advocate and a senior counsel in those battles. That's why there are levels. That's why you see those guys when they come to Namibian court. It's like they are in their home ground, especially looking at that aspect. But let's see. Let's go to a short commercial break and come back shortly.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge kwa tafanona monika ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu oma filane Eagle FM the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka okukwetera oipindi konu konda doinawa nuneudo otukwetera o special ange tashake ngejepa omarudi dayoloka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge kwata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM onora esatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Yeah, we are moving forward with unpacking the day with me, David Shombe. And it's 38 minutes past the hour of 9. You can still engage us in the studio at 083-288-401, 083-288-401. We'll be able to look at what do we have in the village, a newspaper for today. What do we have from our e-paper? What are some of our journalists and the researcher has brought for you? Especially looking at issues of economic affairs, we are indicating to you that when it comes to personal issues, we are not really going there. But when it comes to the aspect of what are we eating tomorrow, where are we getting the sources of food, and how can we empower people with skills and capacity? That is our main focus when it comes to farming. That's why we are always indicating to say, subscribe to the Villager newspaper, and also make sure that we send you an e-paper every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? What?
Yeah, sorry for that. And on top of the Villager newspaper for today, we have ECOWAS to launch a single currency. One of the things that we see is that Economic Commission for West African countries, or West African states, is moving, especially looking at what they want to achieve in the next 5 years. And also to look at, on top of the page of the Villager newspaper, to say the Economic Community of West African States has a reaffirmed plan to launch the single currency. And also, by next year, the union announced this after the 69 ECOWAS Summit of Head of State and Government held in Freetown in Sierra Leone on Sunday. And one thing that you need to know is that the ECOWAS is busy making key strategic decisions. Apart from that, apart from going into detail of this article, just to add to this content, ECOWAS has also looked at what it needs to do, especially connecting Africa and Europe through Nigeria-Morocco pipeline, especially when it comes to supply oil and gas. This was one of the summit that made the key decisions, because the beautiful thing of having head of state summits is that decision can be made there and it's done. Because when head of states meet, head of state is a chief diplomat. And diplomacy at that level is faster because he or she is number one representative of that country. That's why when ECOWAS they meet, they make not a resolution, they make decisions. They make decisions to say by next year we want one currency. How are you going to do it? Then they communicated to people within their country. How do you make sure that you align your system to that aspect? Because looking at the progress of regional blocs, you see that even East African community, you see that regional blocs, they are working together because you cannot go far. The same with life. There are people who think they are on their own. You are not on your own. Either you have to work with people or people have to defeat you. You have to make sure that you have a team. You have to make sure that you are cooperating with other people. You understand how the system is working. That's why regional economic blocs in Africa, there are things that we must really thank them. SADC is also doing very well. But the main problem with SADC is the solution of conflict, particularly in DRC, something that SADC has been struggling with. If you look at the literature of history, you realize to say that even Nelson Mandela and there is a very interesting article on conflict studies. Even Nelson Mandela and Robert Mugabe, at one point they wanted to fight with each other. Say, no, you are a sellout, you are working with the imperialists, you are a dictator and all these things. But you realize that the debates can also be heated, especially when they want to solve problems, because DRC has been one of the pain in SADC that really need to be solved, especially looking at what is happening now. Moving forward, if you look at page 2 of the Villager newspaper, that is extension of that content. And you look at page 3, you see that the Woman Block supermarket has sale. It's called Stash Your Cash with lowest prices at Woman Block, where you have to buy your cornflakes. You still see that there are some adults who still have cornflakes, which is not a problem. Find somebody who is at the age of 70 and still have cornflakes. And it's necessary. And there are a lot of products. And you also have jungle oats. So you must be fit also. But you need to make sure that you eat a balanced diet. There's something that was said by Delisha these days, and I don't know. People asking to say, what did she say? But it's just to be fit. We must be fit as men. Can't be a man unless you are really not feeling very well. You must be fit, because a healthy body is also a healthy mind. And if you have a healthy body, you make important decision. We must not fight Delish. We must thank her, because he's saying no. Men must be fit, but you must eat well. You can't be fit only going to the gym, but you also need to visit a Woman Block here. And you can get that from page 3. Moving forward, when you go to page 4, you have an article by my colleague Anna Kreta that is looking at water shortage and poor market access threaten Salem farmers. Indicated that farmers at Salem Green Scheme Project near Uvunguvungu village in Kavango East say lack of reliable market and poor water supply continue to threaten their livelihood despite years of investment and training. That is what's happening. And maybe we should speak to NamWater. So when you and the government is trying to get the pipeline from Kavango River to the center region, so why can't we make sure that Kavango regions have water first? Then we talk about center regions. So a discussion need to be held to say, if the farmers in Salem Green Scheme Project near Uvunguvungu, they are saying they do not have water, or shortage of water is threatening the development of or the fruitfulness of their farms, why can't we start there before we take the pipe? Because it's like you are giving out food to the neighbors. That's why you have your own kids that are not eating. Page 5, there's an article by David Shombe that is looking at financial inclusion. It's a summary of financial inclusion We look at the perspective of our economist, and also to look at the report, and also the context of Namibia, and also World Bank, to say when it comes to financial inclusion, where are we standing, what needs to be done, and also to say financial inclusion is an enabler, it's not an economic solution. When you are financially included, does not mean that you are financially sorted. It means that you have a possibility of being financially sorted. That's why to say, let's keep that success while we are looking at others. Page 8. Look at page 6. The Vichia University has a very interesting innovation that is called also Innovation Con. And there's a communique, especially from the head of innovation and resource mobilization, that is Mr. Ezekiel Johannes, that is looking at research that matters, turning knowledge into solution for Namibia. And if all the institutions can move into this direction, there is actually nothing that can stop us. There is no corner of the world that can stop us if we are turning knowledge into solutions for Namibian development. Page 7. It's a fragmentation of system cost Africa around 100 billion annually. There is an article by my colleague Dwight Link that is looking at fragmentation of system or divided system is costing Africa $100 billion per year. The African Continental Free Trade Area has noted that Africa fragmented system costing the continent billions in trade or in inter-trade investment and convenience. And also that is a communication from the SG of Africa Continental Free Trade Area Secretariat, that is Wamkele Mene. I remember correctly, at one point he was here in Namibia, and also to look at the progress, especially when it comes to Namibia and Africa Continental Free Trade Area. And also to keep the momentum to say, let us not only start things, but let us keep monitoring and tracking things, to say, when we had our first shipment in June 2025 to Nigeria and Africa Continental Free Trade Area, did the volume of trade increase, or it was just a formalization of trade? At what rate are we trading? And is Africa Continental Free Trade Area changing the lives of Namibians, or it was just for formality? But how many Namibian businesses are ready to participate in Africa Continental Free Trade Area, and how many are already participating? What assistance are they getting, or we are just there? But for you to get the content, look at page 7, and also to look at what is being said, especially from the position of Secretariat of Africa Continental Free Trade Area. Other commodities that you look at, so look at you save your products such as Omaere culted milk. You have Etosha pilchard tomato chili sauce, this tint fish. You also have many other products that you can buy, yogurts. I see my colleague Francina love these products. I think it's also one of the clients of USAVE. But make sure that you read page 7 and 8 of the Villager newspaper. Page 9, youth age to seek farming as entrepreneurship, to say, guys, let's go to farming. The question is that give us land so we go to farming, or what level of farming. But if you want to get all the information, to say there are others who succeed in farming without having a commercial farm. But my colleague Penny Ambeko Jonas, with her research, wrote an article on youth age to seek farming as entrepreneurship. What is the success stories of other entrepreneurs in this industry? And moving forward, page 10, it's an article by Heleni Inane that is looking at new down for housing, new housing model launched. And that is also speaking at who are the new players in the housing industry. You have a new player, especially looking at the Ambuka housing that is being managed by Mehmet Wapewa Kadhikwa, one of the well-known entrepreneurs in Namibia. But read that article at page 10 and also ask yourself a question: what is Ambuka housing or about, and what is a new way of having affordable housing? Page 11, as I said, the Villager newspaper is rich in content, and there's an opinionated article from a medical professional that is Dr. Makemba Nelson. And that article is looking at how health contributes to the GDP of Namibia. And it's interesting to see, especially how health contributes to the GDP of the country. How do we integrate health and also economic growth? Another opinionated article is from Ndishishi Ipinge that is looking at agricultural industrial renewal. To say we need agricultural industrial renewal. What is that Ndishishi Ipinge is speaking about, and what is that that we can learn? Let's look at a short commercial break and come back shortly, and also to look at what is happening in the continent of Africa. And you can still engage us in the studio at 083-288-401-083-288-401. As I indicated, in few minutes, the fate of South African president will be defined by the decision of the court. Especially when the president is challenging the report by the former chief Justice Kobo. And also understand that Cyril is also a lawyer by training, and we'll see who is going to win. But it has been like the legal battle has not been on his side, particularly post 2020, except the review or except the report by Independent Public Protector. Let's look at a short commercial break and come back shortly, and also to look at these issues.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any other
staff. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe udite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano hile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka okukwetera oipindi konu konda doinawa nuneudo otukwetera o special angeta shake ngejefa omarudi dayo loka opone ujendi fenawa nukumona oijabo ili nawa ninge kwata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM konora etatu imwe bali heavy nola natu heavy bali no heavy ile konderewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu watatu oma felane Eagle FM the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwala. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshe fa omarudi. Dayo loka opone ujendi fenawa nukumona oijabo ili nawa ninge kwata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora etatu imwe bali heavy nola natu heavy bali no heavy ile konderewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu watatu oma felane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The eye.
Yeah, it's 59 minutes past the hour of 9. We are here until the hour of 11. And the other news is that in the next few minutes, decision will have to be delivered. The ruling has to be delivered, especially in the Western Cape High Court, to say the president going to be facing impeachment process or not, especially South African president. The case of 2020, the case that involved Namibians that stole money from the SOFA in the presidential private firm that is Palapala. In that case, even when you listen to court, the case that the key players are also Namibians, but it also brought about problems, especially to the president of South Africa. And so today, we say that was the former Chief Justice wrong? Or is the President Cyril Ramaphosa the one who is wrong? Is there any ground of stopping parliamentary process to hold the president accountable? And one thing about South Africa is that power is shifting. Today, if the Chief Justice is appointed by the president tomorrow, Chief Justice can make a decision which is independent in looking at the court of and also to look at the cases. Today, public protector is appointed by parliament. Tomorrow is so being impeached or recalled. But that is check and balance in South Africa. It's intensifying. If you look at the South African constitution, there are many independent institutions that are helping not only the three organs of the state, but you have independent institutions that can look at each other. That's why when you think that the head of prosecution is the one who is strong, but you will be able to see that if independent inquiry is called, is faced with that aspect, even if Zondo has done something wrong, not only to say at one point you held the Zondo Commission, you also be called to order. That's why it's interesting, even that the Madlanga himself, the chair of Madlanga Commission, if tomorrow has done something wrong, you will be called to order. That is what is telling you. That's why South Africa is one of the good examples of check and balance. And we see that the big man today is surviving, or it will be an end of an era. Because remember, if the High Court today indicated that Cyril Ramaphosa has to face impeachment, and there is no need to review the decision of the former former Chief Justice and his team, while the Constitutional Court has already indicated that Parliament must go back and follow the recommendation of the independent panel, then you see things that you did not see. Either resign or be tough enough to face the process, and also to see at the end of the day how he will be able to survive. But the interesting thing about politics is that politics, you can die many times. As long as you are waking up, there is a lot of things. Let us look at what is happening in South Africa and come back shortly.
Let's cross now to the Western Cape. At the Western Cape High Court for us this morning is SABC News reporter Yamkela Mchiyo. Yamkela, good morning. And of course, this is where the attention turns to now. We did, of course, see earlier in the week the impeachment committee meeting. They were meant to look at that shortlist into evidence leaders. But the attention today is squarely on the Western Cape High Court. Talk to us about what exactly the court will be handing judgment down on.
Good morning to you. And as you have rightfully said, the attention now is at the Western Cape High Court, as they are expected to hand down the judgment on the application of an interdict that was launched by President Cyril Ramaphosa to halt the processes of the impeachment committee. What we heard last week when his legal representative, Van Tronkov, he made his submissions before this court, saying that it cannot be that the president appears before that committee on which relies on a report that is yet to be reviewed, because we understand that the president wants that report to be reviewed and set aside. And we also know that hearing is set to be heard on September. So we are here today expecting the judgment, whether it will go the president's way or the impeachment committee's way, because we know that they are, they've been saying that they want to continue with their processes. You have rightfully said this week they have been meeting to ensure that they go ahead and elect the evidence leader that is going to ensure that every process goes accordingly. But just to hear the background as to why we are here today and why did the president suddenly launch that urgent interdict, let us bring in now the acting parliamentary editor, Lulama Makia, to speak to us more on that. As Lulama, we know that today it is a D-Day. The president will know whether his interdict will be successful or not, and the impeachment committee, whether they are going ahead with their work or not. Take us through what the reasons, in fact, as to why we're here today.
Indeed, Yamkela, it's a big day for the president, the impeachment committee, and the country as a whole, because it's the first time that South Africa in this new democratic era is faced with a situation like this, whereby the president is facing an impeachment process. This follows the Constitutional Court judgment in May this year, which referred the independent Section 89 independent panel to the impeachment committee so that the impeachment committee can kickstart the impeachment process. What's the background of that, Yamkela and the SABC viewers? It's when a former National Assembly Speaker, Nosivwe Mapisa Ngakula, set up that panel which investigated the president's role and conduct regarding the Phalaphala farm burglary. That report found that the president has a prima facie case to answer. And what happened in that report? It was voted against by the National Assembly, and that process did not, the impeachment process, or the president did not ultimately answer to that because the National Assembly voted against that report. And then that report was taken to the Concord, which the Concord ruled that it must go back to the impeachment committee. So the president's lawyers last week argued that if that happens, that the impeachment process kickstart without that report being reviewed, it will bring irreparable harm and humiliate the president. Yes.
Well, that was Lula Mamanya, the acting editor in Parliament, speaking to us about the reasons why we are here today. We're expecting to see a number of political parties, as we saw last week, MK was here. So we're expecting more of them, EFF, ATM, to come here and hear what the judgment will be.
Yeah, we are moving forward with unpicking the day. That is what's happening. That is what's happening in South Africa. To say in a few minutes, judgment will be delivered and we'll see the fate of the President Cyril Ramaphosa. And also the Constitutional Court is checking and balancing to say when you have the majority in Parliament doesn't mean that you are correct. Because there's an aspect of democracy that, principle of democracy that is ruled by the majority with the respect of the minority too. Because in most cases, people use what is called the tyranny of numbers. You use the tyranny of numbers because statistics are on your side to make a certain decision. Just because you have numbers, you can make a certain decision. Just because five board members voted in favor of a tender does mean that it followed right procedures. That's why there's an aspect of check and balance, because if you are a lawyer, does mean that you are always correct, although you represent the majority. That's why the Constitutional Court in South Africa say no, because the ANC have numbers in Parliament and they have voted in favor of or against the report of the former Constitutional Court Chief Justice and his team. They should go back and follow the right procedure because there were certain recommendations, and that is what is happening. Now there is no numbers anymore. There is a matter of the executive versus the judiciary, and we see who is going to win. And we can get Cyril Ramaphosa. It's hard to kill. It's a hard man. It's very tough. And also history also taught us that he was supposed to be the second president of South Africa. If you read the book by one of the South African writer, that is William Gumede, Battles of the Souls of ANC, you realize that at one point Nelson Mandela was favoring or wanted really Cyril Ramaphosa because of his negotiation skills to be his successor. But due to the political strategies of Thabo Mbeki and many other things involved, he was not able to do that. But is he winning today, or it will be the end of the road? Because when you look at the representative of the president in the Western Cape High Court, senior counsel advocate Wim Tregove, we indicated that it will be unfair. It will be a process for humiliation of the president facing impeachment while he has an opportunity to review that report. But today is a day. But one thing that you need to know is that the state remain. People can come and go. Leaders can come and go. But the state remain. Its people remain, and that is one thing that we must know, especially when you want to understand the functionality of the state and also our role. To say maybe why we are not moving is because we do not understand our role in the society, why we are blind citizens, why maybe we are not holding people accountable enough, or maybe we are not doing what we're supposed to do, or maybe because we do not understand what is expected from us, because We can't just be wake up and be in front of the Minister of Agriculture and say, give us food, or be in front of the Minister of or be in front of the office of the Prime Minister to say, no, we are hungry, or be in front of the Chancellor's office. But we must also be able to understand our role, to say, what is the role of a responsible citizen? What is the role of a responsible retired citizen? Because even though it's the money that you work for yourself, when you retire, you have a responsibility to give back to the community. You are a former CEO and you just buy your Land Cruiser. And every day you wake up and buy newspaper and kapana. Instead of investing back to the community, we also need to come up with those discussions to say, how do you become a selfless, a responsible citizen? Maybe why we are not moving forward, because we do not understand our role. Maybe we are a bit selfish. Maybe we are, you know, individualistic. But that is one thing that we need to do, especially when it comes to getting where we want to get into as a country. Now, looking at the continental affairs, it's stated that Dangote Refinery secured $2.5 billion investment to expand Africa fuel production. If there is one man that need to multiply his effort, need blessing, and need protection immediately from the AU, it's Aliko Dangote. Regardless of him having money, he never bought a Lamborghini, a Porsche, or bought fancy jewelries. But one of the humble men who is continue to build Africa. And I think Namibian richest people and African richest people must also follow through. Because the game he's playing is a very bigger game. It's at a grand scale. Especially when you are playing with the big boys in the game of oil and gas. And also refining and moving toward value addition when it comes to Africa. And looking at the history of Dangote, he has been through a lot of cases. He's been through a lot of challenges, even from his own government, particularly entering that business. He's a man who stood fight against international cooperation, did not want him to enter into that business. But one thing that is really happening is that he's a hard man to kill too. And his business is continue expanding. And let's hope other people, us too, will be able to learn one thing or two, to say investing at home rather than buying an apartment in Dubai. It's quite necessary to invest at home. So it is stated that Nigerian Dangote Mega Refinery on Thursday secured $2.5 billion investment from private investor fund expansion plan, and also looking at widen refining business to East Africa. That is what is happening. Stated that the private equity investment give investor a slice of 650,000 barrel per day. And refinery launched 2 years ago. And is currently the largest refinery in the continent. And also competing to be the biggest in the world. That is what is happening, especially when you look at Aliko Dangote. And maybe it's also the time to say, when we are going to get our first oil, are we going to add value to our first oil? Because it's not coming out as petrol. It's not coming out as paraffin. It's not coming out as diesel. It's coming out as crude oil. Then for you to refine it, you need a refinery. Maybe it's also to us to say, Namibia, in terms of long term, what lesson are we learning from the mining sector, particularly when we are going to get our first oil? Are we also going to learn that lesson to say, when you get our first oil, we refine it here at home, or we refine it in our neighboring country, or we are still going to send it to Europe for refinery, then we are going to buy it back? And also, are we ready for that business? Those are some of the things that we really need to look at. Especially when it comes to handling of our own natural resources. Now, looking at the outgoing Secretary General of United Nations, UN Chief, says natural resources control and extraction were in conflict. And one thing which I'm always telling people is that there is no honest person than an outgoing leader or than a retired person, because he has no one to answer to anymore. Go, if you want to hear an honest opinion, go to those retired politicians, go to those retired business leaders, go to those retired executives, they will be able to tell you. And looking at Antonio Guterres, for the past 2 years, he has been speaking about Africa and its natural resources. He has been also speaking about Africa become part of the dinner table, especially when it comes to the world. One of the things that he stated, that control and exploitation of natural resources are dramatic, altering causes of conflict in Africa. And he said there should be no more exploitation, no more plundering. And this was one of the things that he stated, especially speaking at the Security Council meeting on natural resource governance. Guterres indicated that it's time to break the old age pattern where resources are extracted, value is captured elsewhere. And maybe just to underline this, to say, when the Secretary General of United Nations is speaking at UN Security Council, he's not only speaking to the world, he's also speaking to Namibia, to say this thing must stop, and it's also driving conflict. The thing of extraction of natural resources and exploitation and control of natural resources without benefiting the locals is fueling conflict in Africa. And to underline the point, the SG said old age pattern where resources are extracted and the value is captured elsewhere should stop. Is continue to impoverishing communities which are being left behind, and is a factor of socio-economic damage. Now, let's give an example. There was a debate that was given, especially looking at the southern part of Namibia, to say it's part with a lot of minerals. But look around. Look at around those mines. Look at the schools around those mines. Look at the communities. Yes, there have been corporate social responsibilities. But are these people capacitated? And also, why value is captured somewhere? And also, when are you going to get it into value addition? In terms of practicality, because we spoke more on value addition. We are speaking on local content now. But are we seeing that now? Because Zimbabwe, one thing you cannot take from Emmerson Mnangagwa, I'm not saying he did very well, because he contradicted himself when he was interviewed to say he was not going to look for another term. But that is a debate of another day. But one thing that you can thank his government is that they say, no, lithium is a critical and critical minerals. We cannot just let it go like that. You need to semi-process it here. That's why now their economy is growing. Their income is increasing. The question that we should ask is that, is the money also reaching the people? Because it's one thing to have numbers, and it's also the other thing to have numbers equally distributed to those who are in need. And if you are in a mining region and you have extended informal sector, and you have young, skilled people that are not be able to be absorbed, we should really ask ourselves a question. And we should really look at the statement of UN Secretary General, especially when he said mining without ending value is causing conflict in the world. And also to see, if you look at how many people of DRC are involved in mining and look at how they look, you really ask yourself to say, God, what have we done wrong as Africans? What have we really done wrong as Africans? But let's look at this story and also come back shortly, especially to look at the UN and the Security Council a meeting on natural resources. Just come back shortly.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the only person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The eye.
The eye.
Yeah, let us look at the United Nations Secretary General, especially his speech at the United Nations Security Council meeting on natural resources governance.
I now give the floor to the Secretary General, His Excellency, Mr. Antonio Guterres. Excellency, Madam Therese Kaye. Across the world, the control and exploitation of natural resources are dramatically altering the causes, dynamics, and outcomes of conflicts. Critical minerals such as lithium, cobalt, nickel, and rare earth elements are gaining in strategic importance. Surging demand from global markets is creating vital opportunities to advance development in producing countries, but it is also driving intense geopolitical competition, putting pressure on concentrated supply chains and fueling conflict with dire humanitarian consequences. All too often, revenues from illicit exploitation of natural resources are pushing peace out of reach. By strengthening armed and criminal actors, connecting local violence to regional and international networks, and weakening incentives for political compromise. We see it in the Eastern Democratic Republic of the Congo, where armed groups have reaped the benefits of illegal mining and mineral smuggling, and civilians have paid the price of ongoing conflict, as noted in successive reports from the group of experts mandated by this council. And we see it in Sudan too, where a bitter fight for political and territorial dominance has been fueled by the exploitation of natural resources, notably gold and gum arabic, leading to atrocities and displacing millions. Everywhere, the greatest burden falls on the least powerful, women and children, and communities displaced from the land that holds the wealth. That is why today's open debate is so timely. Madam President, the Security Council has long recognized that illicit trade and exploitation of natural resources play a significant role in financing armed groups, fueling conflicts, and aggravating humanitarian crises. And you have taken action to cut off these flows, with mandates for relevant UN peace operations to support national authorities in curbing illicit exploitation by armed groups. Calls for stronger accountability of regional and international actors, and the adoption of sanctions regimes, notably concerning the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Libya, and Al-Shabaab, to curtail the illicit trade of natural resources and prevent revenues from fueling violence. I commend the work of the panels and group of experts supporting you in these efforts. By documenting violations, tracing supply chains, and identifying the commercial and financial networks that armed actors use to generate revenue, This knowledge must inform our search for solutions.
Looking ahead, I see four urgent priorities. First, justice. You must ensure mineral development delivers fair and sustainable outcomes for resource-endowed countries and communities. It is time to break the age-old pattern where resources are extracted, value is captured elsewhere, and impoverished communities are left behind to cope with the environmental and socio-economic damage. And it is time to close the gap between a state's recognized sovereignty over its natural resources and its sovereign rights in practice. Nowhere is the sovereignty deficit wider than in Africa, where the enduring consequences of colonialism, coupled with governance challenges, put states at a deep disadvantage when seeking to capture or reinvest the value that lies in their natural resources. The UN panel on critical energy transition minerals shows some of the ways we can shift this dynamic. Through responsible investing, fair value chains, in-country processing and manufacturing, transparency, environmental and human rights standards, and meaningful benefits for affected communities. Countries and communities must benefit first and most from the resources in their own backyard. That is why the United Nations is supporting national authorities to strengthen governance and institutions, improve regulatory frameworks, and ensure minerals contribute to development and peace building. We are supporting efforts to strengthen national capacity to negotiate equitable mining agreements, expand domestic processing and refining, manage public revenues, and mitigate adverse social and environmental impacts. The UN Environment Programme and the UN Economic Commission for Africa are helping advance these efforts in the DRC, Mozambique, Uganda, and Zambia with financing from the joint SDG Fund. Second, prevention. We must curb illicit flows and strengthen transparency across mineral supply chains. Natural resources are often extracted in one country, transported through another, processed elsewhere, and ultimately sold on global markets. Effective action must address the full value chain, not just the point of extraction. Cooperation among producing, transit, and consuming states is vital in closing regulatory and enforcement gaps. International and regional organizations, financial institutions, and industry all have an important role to play, as seen in the last week's announcement that the European Union will ban the purchase, import, and transfer of gold from Sudan, and to ban exports to Sudan of mercury and cyanide that feed its extraction. Together, they can help prevent illicit sourced resources from entering legitimate markets through enforceable legal frameworks and stronger traceability, due diligence, and information sharing. At the same time, we need stronger regional cooperation to narrow the gaps between national systems and that armed groups and criminal networks exploit. Third, peaceful settlement of disputes. We must greater use of the tools outlined in Chapter 6 of the Charter, which I will discuss here in greater detail tomorrow, including when disputes over natural resources affect the prospects for peace. Questions of access, ownership, territorial control, revenue sharing, and local benefits are often political issues, not merely technical ones. Where they materially shape the interests of the parties or the viability of an agreement, they should inform political analysis and peaceful means of settling disputes, including good offices and mediation. This can help identify workable arrangements, address incentives for continued conflict, and create areas of cooperation in support of a wider political settlement. And fourth, climate. We must ensure that preventive and political efforts take climate analysis into account. Drought, flooding, environmental degradation, and ecosystem loss often reduce access to land, water, and minerals. And when that happens, the ripple effects can cut off livelihoods, strain institutions, heighten tensions, and even spark violence. That is why we are supporting national and regional partners in identifying where environmental pressures, displacement, and competition over natural resources may compound existing grievances and where early engagement could help prevent escalation. The UN Regional Office for Central Africa, for example, is integrating climate, peace and security analysis into early warning and planning in Cameroon, Central African Republic, Chad and the DRC. And in Abyei, UNEP, the Office of the Special Envoy for the Horn of Africa and UNISFA, are supporting locally led peace
Yeah, we are moving forward with unpacking the day. It's 32 minutes past the hour of 10, and you are listening to the speech of the Secretary General of United Nations, that is Antonio Guterres, that is indicating that that thing of, and I'm paraphrasing him, he simply saying that thing of exploiting resources must stop because it's the factor of conflict. He gave an example of what's happening in DRC. He also commended the EU for stopping importing gold from Sudan and also supplying them with mercury and also other chemicals that are making it very easy for extraction of those minerals. And also to look at the case of Namibia, one may also look at the aspect of that. Is Namibia also listening to what the UN Secretary General is saying, especially when it comes to critical minerals? To say, if you ask a question to say, does Namibia have lithium mines? One will be able to say, yes, there are lithium deposits. There are also lithium sites. So if you look at Karibib, or near Karibib, you also look at Erongo and Hardap regions, you will see, realize that those elements, we have them. The question is that are we exporting them raw, or we are adding value to it? And in the long term, what problematic part will this cause? Because what the DRC did not, is not satisfied. That is why conflict and also when it comes to minerals, they go hand in hand. Especially exploitation of minerals and conflict. Those one, they are cousins, they are related. That's why it's urging to say the people of those countries must benefit from their resources. And also the question is that what is our take, especially from the UN Secretary General? He's very clear of what he is indicating. And also just to look at what happening in SA. SA continue to shock us. And you don't know what will shock you next. Cyril Ramaphosa survived. The judgment of the Western High Court indicated that the president is granted an interim interdict to stop parliamentary impeachment committee for proceeding, which means that he's not going to face impeachment process for now, but is given an opportunity to review the Parapala your report. I still have to look at what the judgment really entails. But what you need to know is that Cyril Ramaphosa, with his political game, and also maybe his forward thinking, he survived for now because people expected the High Court to follow the directive of the Constitutional Court. But it seems like for now, the process of impeachment will be stopped until the time that is required. And also to say, is this within the law? And what did the judicial officer look at? What did those who are in charge of court look at? How did the judgment goes? Especially looking at that aspect. But for now, know that Palapala report has to be reviewed by the president. And if there are ground that he will not be able to face impeachment committee, that is looking at the future. But one thing about Cyril, unlike other president, he is a president who faced a lot of challenges, especially which other could have resigned. But you also see that he's also a fighter. It's one thing that you need to learn. Maybe he's not guilty. Maybe the law is taking its course. Maybe the law is taking its course. Maybe he's going to win. Who knows? But that is what the Western Cape High Court has indicated to say for now. He did not, he's not going to face the impeachment committee. But given that opportunity, let's look at a short commercial break and we look at this news and also continue with the conversation.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any other
staff. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the R.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapino nweku tite opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano hile koshuana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu watatu oma filane Eagle FM the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapino nweku tite opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano hile koshuana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu watatu oma filane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the R.
Yeah, we are moving forward with unpacking the day with me, David Shombe. One must also be able to look at there are people who go to court every day and they survive every day, and there are those who go to court and that will be their last day being an ordinary civilian. But let's just look at what happened in South Africa just a few minutes ago, particularly looking at the judgment. Seems like Cyril Ramaphosa survived, especially facing impeachment committee for now. But what was really the context of the judgment and what is currently happening, especially in South Africa?
Court has killed
Thank you, Mr. Parasamy.
May please support my lord. My surname is Bilamtio and I'm appearing for the 6th and 7th respondent.
Thank you. This matter was argued before us last week over a period of 2 days. And we reserved a judgment until today. This court has carefully considered the weighty arguments advanced by the parties in the limited time available given the urgency of the matter. There are 3 judgments. The first judgment concludes, for reasons set out therein, that the President has not made out a case for an interim interdict. It proposes that the application be dismissed. The second judgment concludes that the President has made out a case for an interim interdict for the reasons set out in that judgment. It proposes that an interdict of limited duration be granted. The third judgment concurs with the second judgment. The second judgment is the majority judgment. In the result, the following order is made. 1. Pending the determination by this court of the applicant's review under case number 2026/119192, the first and second respondents are interdicted from proceeding with the public impeachment hearings in terms of Rule 129 capital M of the National Assembly Rules. 2. The cost of the application shall stand over for determination by the court which hears the review. The judgment will be made available on case lines and safely shortly after we adjourn this court. That is our judgment, and we will then adjourn. Court adjourns.
Yeah, that is what is happening, especially looking at the Western Cape High Court. Although full judgment will be delivered, one must be able to see the majority judgment. It's looking at the possibility, or the majority judgment is looking at the President to be given time, especially to review the Palapala. But let's see. Let's wait and see, particularly in details, what will happen, especially in South Africa. You see, South Africa continue to shock us, continue to surprise you. But you also realize that when it comes to jurisprudence, when it comes to constitutionalism, you realize that South Africa is a bit ahead than Namibia. Although we have a commonality in terms of our laws, you realize that even the judicial system is a bit big, expanded. They have a Supreme Court and the Constitutional Court of Appeal, and they have what you call chapter 9 institutions, so where you have your independent institution, your NPA, you have your NPA, you also have your public protector, and also many other institutions that do a check and balance. And you can also see that you can win at court and lose at parliament, or both. Or you can be acquitted at court, but you can still lose at other institution. That's why you see that there are two parallel decisions before it comes to this aspect, to say the public protector has cleared the President to say no, the President does not really have a case to answer because he was not directly involved into the business. But you also have an independent panel that is saying, no, there might be prima facie evidence that shows that the President has a case to answer. Then you have a constitutional court in South Africa that is saying, oh, continue with impeachment. Then you have now what is happening. But let's see how things are going to turn out, especially looking at that aspect. Before we move forward, you can still engage us in the studio at 083-288-401-083-288-401. And also to continue expanding on the conversation for today, to say, apart from being praised by our neighbors, apart from being praised by international community, why we are very slow with filling the gap of economic inequality. After 36 years, for example, is it really that we did not even move three steps? Is it only Namibia and South Africa that were colonized? Is it only Namibia and South Africa that were colonized that our income inequality, the gap is so big than even DRC, is bigger than Afghanistan, is bigger than Iran, is bigger than Yemen, is bigger than countries that, you know, have been in war for the past 20 years. The question is that what can we do to make sure that regardless of the progress on infrastructure, regardless of progress of the economy, that gap is filled? And also, what is the danger of continue expanding the gap of income inequality? Because economic scenario planning shall also include how will people react in the next 20 years if we continue to be the second highest unequal country. How will our economy going to be looking like? And also to say, is our economy going to be dominated by the formal or informal market, informal economy, especially looking at the data and statistics that are not really convincing us that achieving what is wanted by the world means achieving what Namibia wants. But those are things that are debate that will never end, and also debate that should continue to be expanded. And also to look at what we expect, especially in the last minute of our program, we will look at what we expect, especially looking at the midterm budget review that will happen in a month or after 2 months or so. But also to emphasize on to say, what do we expect in you, especially in terms of moving forward as a country. So let's come back shortly and we'll be able to continue that conversation.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and Eagle
Star. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the hour.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Kono nongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano.
okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka okukwetera oipindi konu kwanda doinawa nuneudo otukwetera o special ange tashake ngeje pa omarudi tayo loka opone ujendi finawa nukumona oijamo ilinawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM VI.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwala. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi tayo loka opone ujendi finawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM VI.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
eye. Yeah, we are moving forward with unpacking the day. Maybe the other thing that we should look at is the area of sport, especially in the continent of Africa. They stated that South Africa, Botswana, and Zimbabwe have submitted their bid to host the 2028 African Cup of Nations. And you're also asking yourself to say, when you are submitting, why are you leaving your brother or your sister Namibia? Why Namibia is not part of this submission if there have been a lot of discussion and a lot of ambition of Namibia to co-host AFCON, African Cup of Nations? Is it really because of our stadium? Is it really because of our stadium? Do we have really ambition to build national infrastructure, especially infrastructure that training our national teams? And also, maybe when are we going to submit our bids? Because it's quite disheartening to look at this submission. To say, even though Namibia has always been in the picture, to say we also want to host AFCON, but how are we going to host it in the way? How are we going to host it at Churachura Stadium? Or we are going to host it where? And also the question maybe we should look at to say, at what pace are we moving, especially in upgrading our infrastructure? When you look at Rwanda has built one of the best basketball stadium in 6 months. State of art that international players can go, the international events can happen there. But with Namibia, can we really say it would take us 15 years not to build but to upgrade a national stadium, independent stadium, so that it can reach category 2? As it is, stated, or it can reach a standard that Confederation of African Football wants. But other boys are playing, we are still watching through. But it's also the question of asking of progress. Maybe it's also to ask, because the last time I've heard I was at an event where the deputy minister of sport, youth, education, and our long ministry, that Dino Barotti said no. He really appreciates the funds being availed, especially upgrading of stadiums, but there is still more money needed. And the private sector must also partake. Maybe it's also time to speak to our insurance companies to say, we understand the non-banking sector is the one which has a lot of money, but can you also invest in sport infrastructure? Can you also invest in sport infrastructure, at least football, so that they shall really, when they are coming from Sundowns, they should not just come at home, but at least play in stadiums that are up to standard, and also train others. Because if the dream of hosting AFCON is not even in our mind, the dream of playing at the World Cup level is very, very far. Because the dream, even our dream of playing at home, is very, very far. But the question is that, is the money the problem? Is it the willingness? Is it the right person to upgrade those stadiums? And we should also continue asking and also checking, especially to those who are given funds, especially regions, to say, if you go to Angwena region, if you go to Oshana, where there was a groundbreaking of regional stadiums, what is the progress? How long maybe it's going to take us to have those stadiums inaugurated? Because if we are not asking, I'm not saying they're going to become white elephant project. I don't even want that to happen. But if we are not asking, next time we see we're in 2035, then we are conducting a study on what really happened, especially to those stadiums. But let's hope that those who are charged with the responsibility, the able governors, will be able to lead those progress, at least when we play at the region. But, you know, the aspect of South Africa and Botswana, even Zimbabwe, people are saying even Zimbabwe, but Zimbabwe has been a big country before. Got independence in 1979, has been a big country. Take out the aspect of early 2000 sanctions, but when people are saying even Zimbabwe is bidding, but Namibia is not. But Zimbabwe is far from us already, has overtaken us, although it's not in our league anymore. Because Zimbabwe has an airline. Zimbabwe has an economy which is predicted to grow at 6%. Zimbabwe is adding value to its lithium now, as we are speaking. And we still have a lot of things to learn. But let's end here for now, and also be able to listen to Abigail. But for me, David Shombe, bye-bye for now. It has been a pleasure. Enjoy your Friday. Take care of yourself. And also see you around. Sharp, sharp.